Greetings. Welcome to the Storytime Broadcast. I'm Eric Brah, and each episode I read a story, and with the help of my partners at 3-Pound Magician, we hope to entertain you. The stories vary in style, some happy, some sad, and some might be like this story, a bit wacky. This time we follow along with Craig as he visits Orlando on an important mission that might include Phil Collins. If you care to support us here at 3-Pound Magician, check out our Patreon. Now, let's get on with our story. Written by Corey Hill and sound designed by Frank Sladisco. Craig comes to Orlando. 1/0998802. Craig was reclining poolside at a Days Inn, reading a mass-market paperback about a murder on a dirigible.
Blimp of blood.
Gathering his thoughts under the ceaseless radiation of that infernal orb of fusion. For the better part of the last 2 days, he'd been keeping a low profile, cruising the outskirts of the Orlando Greater Metro area in search of a mark he could interrogate, watching TMZ for coded transmissions, swimming. It was ridiculously hot even though it was only 8 a.m., The outright derangement of the climate was part of the reason Orlando had been chosen for their most important projects in the first place. It made them pliant, critical thinking impossible with the constant threat of suffocation and heatstroke. Orlando. The city beautiful, the city of buffet lights, the big orange, the fetid mouse lair erected on the desiccated tendrils of a former swamp. The squibbly heart of the inscrutable Craig Empire coursing with the grim determination of 1.25 million Midwestern dads maximizing their daylight with goddamn hard-earned dollars in a mirage of incandescent sugary drinks and twirling corn dogs and cascades of frigid air. Once, oh once, he had gulped down the maximal mindlessness of the place with an eagerness bordering on mania. That was before he'd made the final decision to break from their orthodoxy while right in the middle of haranguing a local miscreant about riding his bike on the sidewalk. "Ride on the fucking street like a decent human being!" he'd shouted after a vigorous shake of the fist, and then he heard the words come out of his mouth, and the realization hit him that he was working towards all the wrong goals in life. For the past 6 weeks, he'd been on the run, doing just what they thought he would, making use of his advanced skills in subterfuge to evade detection. The running had been stressful, always wondering if the guy asking whether the quesadillas at Applebee's were too spicy was just a suburban infiltration Craig probing for inconsistencies in the implementation of the fast casual dining scheme. Worrying when they might snatch him up and throw him into a Prius with blacked-out windows and fry his kidneys with their machines disguised within Crocs. There were so many Craigs out there, and he didn't know the full extent of what they might be up to at any given point in time due to the compartmentalization of information. He would not allow them to strip him of his dignity. He would turn and steer directly into the pulsing eye. They would never expect it. No Craig in all the storied history of Craigs had ever attempted it. To even think of turning on the Craigs, it was foolhardy, suicidal, very un-Craig, a direct contravention of 1.118 of the Craig Codex. Yet, if there any Craig to succeed, he was that Craig. As a high-level infiltration Craig, he had the appropriate skill set. 2 decades spent engaged in the sneakiest, most devious of all their operations, infiltrating an event planner's lair, working in HR departments setting break room policies, providing nonsensical career advice to community college students, treasurer of the neighborhood committee, the kind of black bag work that kept the whole thing going. As for mission-specific resources, he was in the green zone. He had ample cash, some in the fanny pack always on his waist, some within an envelope stashed between the pages of Book 2 in the series of lighter-than-air crime capers, Red Zeppelin. From the sale of most of his personal belongings, excepting some flatware and macaroni necklaces he'd placed in a self-storage unit in an anonymous burb in the heartland. He had a birdcage, no birds yet, the speaker, the Phil Collins tunes, a variety of hats and tasteful scarves, and of course, comfortable shoes. 9.100981. A fat drop of sweat landed on the page of his book. Craig wiped his brow with a towel and was dismayed to see that a suspicious fellow had sidled into the deck chair next to him without his having noticed. "Sup, man?" the gentleman inquired. He was wearing red board shorts patterned with white flowers, sandals, no shirt. He was in excellent physical condition, heavily muscled with clean, predatory incisors. He was wearing sunglasses. He was tall. "Not much. Doing a little reading," Craig said cautiously. He held aloft the Airport Beach Dentist 50 weeks on the New York Times bestseller book. The gentleman scanned the cover and broke into a gigantic smile. "Cool, cool. I've read that one. Crazy ending," the gentleman said. "Don't spoil it for me," Craig protested. "No, bro, never. Of course not," said the gentleman, almost hurt by the suggestion. Craig sense tingled. There was something about the gentleman, something about him, the very way he spoke. "What's your name, bro?" the gentleman asked. Craig placed his mass-market paperback with poorly drawn stock characters and terrible dialogue but a propulsive plot onto the adjacent chair. This sealed it. The straightforward assumption that it would be acceptable to greet another adult using the word bro. The sharp teeth. The developed pectorals. A bro, Craig. Here. And such an obvious example. He was probably a novice, given how obtrusive his broality displays were. With any luck, he could pump him for information. "Dennis," said Craig, lying.
"Trey, nice to meet you, bro,"
said this Craig, masquerading as Trey. They shook hands, and Craig had to stop himself from transitioning straight into the secret handshake.
"What are you in town for?" bro Craig asked.
"I just wanted to come to Orlando. Always wanted to visit, see the sights, go to the new Harry Potter world. I've always wanted to experience Hogwarts firsthand, eat the food, but never really had the time. Finally, I just said, screw it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to commit," said Craig.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Being proactive in this motherfucker. Setting goals and attaining them. I like it, man. I dig that. Goal setting. That's what I'm learning about at this accelerated MBA I'm doing," said Bro Craig 1.
They were never too creative with the backgrounds on the Bro Craigs. Half of them had MBAs and fully 80% of them were in sales.
"So, how you liking it so far?" BC 1 continued.
"So far, so good. Had a great dinner at this Thai sushi place on International Drive last night. It's so great when those two are together. I'm thinking about hitting up Animal Kingdom today. I can't wait to see what they did with the new Pandora thing. I always loved Avatar."
While he was spooling out a standard cover, Craig was spinning on how best to flip this bro into spilling. He'd spent a week with the bro Craigs for a joint operation during spring break in 2002, Daytona Beach, Florida. He'd never seen more bros in one place. His team had been in support role to the massive deployment of BCs and had to spend a great deal of time with them in close quarters, with many of his team issued filters to mitigate the noxious combination of Axe body spray and Marlboro lights. Bro Craigs. He knew them as well as anyone could be said to really know them. So what were their weaknesses? Strengths?
"Fuck yeah, living the dream, bro. You're living the dream."
They were impervious to shame and many types of physical injury. They were generally strong. Their teeth were filed to points in case they had to bite a hand or a milky thigh. God damn, he'd seen one of them tumble off a balcony and go straight into shotgunning a Bud Light.
"That's right, living the dream," agreed Craig.
Jaeger shots. It came to him suddenly. Bro Craigs could be felled with Jaeger shots.
Some brilliant smart Craig had engineered a dead man switch in fear of what might happen should the outsized physical strength and sheer number of bro Craigs ever require a failsafe.
You know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Want to take some shots? Craig asked.
BC1 wavered.
I don't know, man. I'm supposed to go to this thing tomorrow, he said.
Oh, cool. I'm just going to grab a Jaeger bomb then, solo style, Craig said.
The switch was activated. BC1 would have no choice but to high-five him or fist bump him and follow Craig to the bar.
Oh, Jaeger bombs? Fuck yeah!
BC1 high-fived him and grabbed a balled-up tank top off the seat. He unfurled the shirt, revealing that it was merchandise from Florida State University. FSU was one of their top recruiting grounds. He may as well have worn a blinking neon sign. Craig thought back to his own training period as they walked to the bar with BC1 blathering a steady stream about the Entourage movie. He'd been at one of the lesser-known spots, a liberal arts college in Vermont where people took acid out by a gnarled tree. He had taken drugs and looked at the tree and written papers, and he was doing everything they asked of him, and when he graduated, it was a seamless transition into the employ of their vast shadowy empire. An empire he was once proud to be a part of. He'd eaten the mozzarella sticks with great joy, truly. Not feigned, but unmitigated pleasure as he popped the fried cheese tubules into his mouth. He'd enthusiastically backed it all. From the bro Craigs running amok in Cancun to the secretive teams working at ABC on Friday night programming.
4 Jaeger bombs, please, Craig said, placing a $20 bill under the countertop.
Here, in Orlando, the alcohol was kept artificially cheap in a tacit arrangement that greased the mass of them through the aardvark snouts and parking garages with ease.
Hell yeah, proactive in this motherfucker, said BC1.
They took 2 shots, one after the other. Then a few more shots interspersed with Coors Lights.
Did I tell you what I do for a living? I don't think I did. I'm in business development for a company that sells POS systems to fast casual restaurants. It's pretty awesome. I mean, sometimes it's boring, but I get to travel around the country for free and eat at cool restaurants like Panera and Red Lobster and shit, BC1 said.
Ah, business development. Sometimes he forgot that most of them had stopped calling it sales some time ago. Business development. Sales. Their carapace changed shapes, but underneath the same hermit crab. In another decade hence, it would be something else. That was the way of the Craig.
4 more, barkeep,
Craig said. BC1, per his conditioning, fist-bumped him.
It's great, man. It's all great here. I love Orlando. One of the best places in the world, really. Got everything you need. Entertainment. You can go to Islands of Adventure, ride the rides, then go listen to Bob Marley afterwards. And food. You want a Brazilian steakhouse? Got 5. Plenty of parking everywhere. It's never cold here. How could you not love this place?
Me too, said Craig. And he had once in another life.
4 more, Craig said.
After 7 rounds, BC1 grew wobbly. It was clear this bro Craig was forgetting his training. The veneer of invulnerability peeled back as this bro began revealing that he'd been fat in middle school, that he wondered if he really made the right choices in life, if he respected women enough. Craig knew this bro Craig was ready to be plied for information.
"Why are you really here in Orlando?" Craig asked.
BC1 stopped to consider for a moment, but too many Jaeger shots. There was no way he would keep his secrets now.
Conference. There's a big conference this weekend. Everyone's going to be there. Everyone, all the country, anyone who's anyone. The big show, the big show.
He trailed off. Aha! Everyone. All the Craigs. Bro Craigs, Brain Craigs, Outdoor Craigs. Subterfuge Craigs, in one place, drinking tea, eating pastries probably. This was just the type of intel he'd been looking for.
Thank you,
Craig said, patting BC1 on the shoulders. BC1 collapsed onto the countertop, instantly sleeping, dreams of Doritos and an Entourage movie sequel sprouting in his frontal cortex. A conference, here, in the open,
In the city built and maintained with the collective will of the International Craig Consortium, Orlando. They were up to something big to drop all pretense in such a manner. 808099-110. Craig left a 20 on the counter to pay for the last round. He nodded to the bartender, who obviously had a great deal of experience in minding his particular kind of visitor. Craig had a solid lead. It was time to move to the next phase, to breach the belly of the great beast. It wouldn't do at all to remain this far away from the Meridian now that he'd made contact with BC-1 and pumped him for everything he knew. It was good to flip his training and use it against them. The picking up of clues, the pretending to be interested in the uninteresting, the liking of unlikable things like theme parks and corn dogs and restaurants that combine sushi and Thai, the drinking of terrible beers and discussing of terrible movies and refusal to comment on the wretchedness of any of it, no matter how open they became with their vile deconstruction of the natural order. These were his tools. The slippery eel, the playful sea otter, the dancing tarantula all allowed him to move through the civilian population, making suggestions and guiding conversations and building entire workplace cultures around properly labeling old tuna sandwiches in the shared refrigerator without anyone even ever having a second thought. Craig dismounted triumphantly from the barstool with the intention of beginning his next attack, but the inner ear and the tile were not cooperating, so he careened into a ficus. The Jaeger, the Coors, the hot sun. He was not immune. Perhaps he wasn't in the proper state for further offensive operations. He would need all his wits about him for the terminal stages. The hotel room was suitable, so he found his way back to his base, kicked off his shoes, and turned the AC to 65, and burrowed under the covers and turned on the weather channel. What propitious timing for it all. There just might be a chance for him, and for anyone else too, even if they didn't know it. This was the first time since he decided to dream the impossible dream that he really felt a sliver of possibility in his strategy. The wonder box unspooled for him in delightful monotone the 5-day forecast for the Orlando area, followed by a brief summary of weather in the Midwest, followed by a show about tornadoes, better than any sleep aid yet invented. After a 3-hour nap, Craig was once more in the right mind space for forward maneuvers. He changed into a new pair of socks. 009.00991. He summoned an Uber to take him to the convention center. While he waited in the hotel lobby for the driver, he checked the statistics on the building. 9 billion square feet of tile and carpet and sheetrock. Pillars, majestic pillars. Tables with fancy tablecloths. Smiling people eating conference food. The place you have to have your next event is right here in the heart of beautiful Orlando. Affordable pricing, close to thousands and thousands of hotel rooms, and close to family-friendly attractions and great dining. And no, of course you wouldn't rather have your thing in Las Vegas or San Diego, don't be stupid. He searched through the calendar and found the event mentioned previously by BC-1, May 12th through 14th, National Small Business Owner Conference. Craig made a notation in his phone as a Ford Explorer pulled up.
You here for the big thing this weekend? The driver asked.
Indeed, good sir, Craig responded.
Okay, shouldn't take more than 10 minutes from here.
Everywhere the signs of appropriately channeled commercial impulses, double-decker tour buses, dinosaur restaurants, grown men wearing goofy ear hats.
What do you think about Orlando? The man asked.
I love it. Best city in the world, Craig said. One could never be sure.
Really?
Really? Craig said.
For me, I'd take Paris any day over this dump. Paris is like nothing you'd believe, said the driver.
The city flickered by in fragments. A churro stand here, a giant spinning metal thing there.
Does Paris have a Harry Potter theme park and a zoo made by Disney? Asked Craig.
The driver turned and arched his eyebrow. This was cutting dangerously close for Craig. He would have to dial it back.
Not that I know of, but what a city. There's so much history there. Not like this place, you know? Orlando was nothing before they built all this crap. Nothing. Everything here was just tourist crap. None of it has any real cultural value. It's all just built to suck your money. It's terrible. People save up for 3 years to go eat at a buffet? I don't get it, the man said. It was indeed tempting to agree, but were he to slander the crown jewels so openly, it would risk blowing his carefully crafted cover.
Oh, I don't know. Orlando's probably just different than Paris, you know? There's plenty of parking everywhere, and it's a lot cheaper here than most big cities, and cleaner, too. I was just in San Francisco for a week, and that place is a dump. Here, you can bring the whole family, and there's something for everyone. It's great, Craig said.
They passed three dinosaur-themed restaurants.
Whatever you say, guy, said the driver, but it's not as cheap as you think to live here, and the pay is shit. You know they pay most people at these parks $8 an hour? You think you can pay rent on anything for $8 an hour? I didn't want to drive people around in my personal car either, but fuck if I'm going to wipe up vomit from a roller coaster. And even this, Uber, when I started it was fine, better than a lot of things, but now it's hard, you know? I thought I'd be able to get by, but they keep cutting the amount they pay me. Rent keeps going up, daycare, food, all of it. Everything is more expensive. Everything is worse. Someone's getting rich out there, but it sure ain't me.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, Craig said. But I think things are going to get much better for you, for all of us, soon.
I really hope so, said the driver.
Oh, it will.
I know it, Craig said in a sort of perpetual up-tempo he'd inhabited for the last few decades. Six billboards for a medical-themed event dining experience.
I hope so. I really hope so, said the man quietly.
The car slowed to a stop at the feet of a massive white building. The Orange County Convention Center abutted against the shores of a hole scraped into the earth and filled with pond scum and duck shit. Gleaming, white. A seashell, a ballroom, a chamber for commerce kept 60 degrees year-round.
The place to have your next event!
It was truly a fearsome bit of architecture. They were moving beyond subtlety with this selection. It was brazen, clearly the indication of some sort of terminus of centuries of scheming. Craig was momentarily stunned by the implications. Whatever it was they were doing all these years was coming to an end. And the flip side was likely to be a terrifying place.
Here you are, Orange County Convention Center, built with tax credits, empty most of the year because people have their shit at Disney World, said the driver.
Oh, said Craig.
This aligned well with their goals as he understood them. He put $200, all but $20 of his remaining cash, into the chip jar and left the vehicle. He watched the Ford Explorer drive away, and hoped beyond what was reasonable that the driver might find some way to generate velocity sufficient to escape from Orlando's gravity well. The nearest giant doors were locked. He pounded on the entryway, but none of the workers within heeded him. So he went back down the ridiculous stairs and trudged to another giant doorway and attempted the same. No luck. And the next after that. After six doors, he reached the conclusion that all of the entrances were barred, the giant seashell currently impregnable. He sat on a bench and briefly fretted. Then he was up again 8 seconds later. If his time with the Craigs had taught him nothing else, it was the primacy of pivoting towards the next opportunity in the face of adversity. Craig Codex 3.99836. Never give up, Captain's orders. Craig had come across this bit of wisdom beneath a word search on the back of a Captain Crunch box he was reading one morning after a particularly brutal 3-day mission with Alex's parents in Dayton that had created little in the way of reportable progress. Oftentimes they dribbled vital pieces of the picture openly, but to everyone else it would just look like the kind of stuff that marketers put on the back of a box to keep kids quiet while their parents considered whether Spanish immersion or gymnastics was just the thing little Billy needed to survive the competitive admissions process at Stanford. Captain's orders. There was still the possibility for more intelligence gathering, to see if it wasn't too late to get some sort of free pass online into the environs, some way he could find some sort of layout for the venue.
at the very least discover the identity of the keynote speaker. Many of the directives from the Craig Codex were easy enough to mix up, like 9.0091 and 1.00019, relating to the appropriate number of shrimp to be eaten at public events so as to appear enthusiastic but not greedy, 5, and the appropriate level of grief to display for the death of a neighbor's beloved cat, moderate. But the 3.99836, the captain's orders, were impossible to forget. Never give up. It was the directive that many Craigs, including this Craig, leaned upon heavily in times of great distress and the burgeoning ugliness of not knowing much of anything about anything. Captain's orders. Alex cried a great deal on the way back from her parents' house because maybe they both realized, or maybe she just realized, the incongruity of their situation and that people are who they are. And she shouted in other instances at the grocery store getting tomatoes. The cat got cat cancer. The shape of the trees was wrong sometimes. And Craig couldn't leave the couch. Sometimes when the sidewalks were quivering on Sunday mornings, he did not have any will to keep walking on them, to follow them through to their endpoints, discreet or otherwise. But in these dark times, he was stayed from the depths of the inescapable by the strength and simplicity of the directive. Never give up. Never give up. Never give up, and he never did. Even when it seemed like the reasonable, responsible human thing to do, he never did. He pushed until the next mission was complete, and there was some kind of relief in this. 8-9-9-8-7-3-9-8-7-3-2-4-9-8-3-7-Q-2-5-9-8-4-6-2-8-7. Craig walked around the corner to find something to eat while he planned his next steps, scrolling through the event description on his phone and taking notes. He would have rated himself a 7.5 on the optimism scale had he been queried. It was then that he noticed that his shoe had become untied and he stopped to rectify. It was a wonderful day, and Craig took his time to ensure that his laces were properly secured. Midway through the retying, he heard some sort of indistinct rumbling. Glint of sunlight off the shiny steel. Massive shape moving quickly. He always thought he was the kind of person who did well under pressure. That time with the flat tire on the highway. That time the fish tank cracked in the dorm and he had just seconds to scoop the giant goldfish out. That time that guy was rude at the movie theater. He thought he handled things well enough that if a gunman took over the subway, where he was being forced into eating a 6-inch tuna sandwich, he would do something, even if it were just creating a distraction and running away. Not that all of this went through his head at the time. Nothing really went through his head other than, oh holy shit, oh holy shit, oh holy shit, but the nonverbal form of this because he wasn't composed enough to think coherent thoughts. Racka, 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 this is the sound of a gleaming metallic thing careening down the sidewalk. Perhaps there was someone shouting something that could have been, get the fuck out of the way! But he did not hear anything so distinct. Racka, racka, racka. The noise and the bouncing metal instantly fried all his processors, and he simply froze and didn't have the wherewithal to flash through important scenes from his life before what was likely to be his death. Racka. Just before the metallic doom ended, Craig, he felt an impact on his shoulder, and he found himself slammed to the grass beside the sidewalk. He was the opposite of dead. He opened his eyes to see a woman's face.
Why didn't you move out of the way? Are you okay? Is something wrong with you?
Well, of course, this wasn't the proper venue to out with it.
Shit! Holy shit, 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 shit,
Craig said. He was trying to say, thank you for saving my life. That would have been a hell of a thing to have my run on this plane of existence ended, but it didn't come out just then.
You're welcome, she said anyway.
She stood and extended her hand and pulled Craig to his feet. Hardy eyebrows, a strident nose. She actually looked a lot like Alex, and this realization was both pleasing and devastating in equal measure. So Craig pushed all those associations quickly down into the memory hole where they belonged. A few feet away, the object had come to rest in the grass, lying on its side, the wheel still spinning.
What the hell was that? Craig asked.
Hot dog cart, she said matter-of-factly. They walked together towards the upended cart. Many of the metallic doors had slammed open. The hot dogs and steaming hot dog water were spilling onto the grass like entrails from a gutted beast, which seemed appropriate given the prime ingredients in hot dogs. "Is this making me hungry in spite of the fact that this cart almost just killed you?"
"Yes."
"Yes, it is," the woman said, answering her own question. A harried man came running up a moment later.
"Is everyone okay?"
the harried man asked.
"We are. Your cart, not so much," said the woman, nodding towards the crippled conveyance.
The harried man eyed his cart with dismay.
"Here, we'll help you," she said to the harried man as he attempted to right the cart.
Craig grabbed one handle, the harried man another. The life-saving woman pushed from the side. With their combined effort, they righted the cart.
"I'd like to thank you. How about a few free dogs?" the man asked.
"Not the ones from the ground, I hope," Craig said.
"No, no, never. It looks like one of the compartments made it through all right."
Against his better instincts, Craig found himself accepting a gratis hot dog from a man who had almost killed him. His day's trajectory was getting off track.
"Martha Myers," she said.
"Stan Johnson," said Craig. They shook hands. Her hand was dry and warm, like a cockatiel's delicate talons.
"You can't eat too many hot dogs in 1 month. It increases your chances for cancer," she said.
"I don't think I'm ever in danger of that," Craig said. "I eat a responsible amount of hot dogs, but never over the limit."
"Oh, I love hot dogs. I have to keep a close watch. I think I skirt right up to the edge every month, really living in that risk factor danger zone. But I always say, if you're not in the danger zone, you're not really living," she said.
"Was she? Ah, well, a maverick, huh?" he asked.
"I guess so. I think there's a whole lot of life out there to be lived," she said.
The hot dog consumption came to be a mobile affair. They perambulated away from the cart back towards the lake.
"Did your life flash before your eyes or anything when that cart almost ended your life?" she asked without much segue.
"You know, it really didn't," he said.
Oh no, that means you've led a really boring life," she said.
She didn't wait to see how he took it. She just started laughing with no restraint. Oddly, he felt defensive. His life had not been boring in the slightest, although to the untrained eye it might appear that way. To the civilian spending 4 years working for an event planner as an assistant manager at a mauve office in a strip mall in a suburb of Michigan might seem like nothing, but that was only because they weren't privy to the importance of his mission. All of those sandwiches, the 5 hours per week of mandatory Judge Judy watching, without the proper context, without knowing the mission, of course, yeah, he could see how it could be mistaken for wasted time.
"I think I did some interesting things now and again. I rode a zebra once," he said.
"Ooh, I've always wanted to ride an ostrich. I actually found a guy around here who owns some ostriches. I called him up and asked if I could pay him to let me ride on them, you know, like they do in the Swiss Family Robinson. I told him I'd pay him actually a lot of money."
"How much?"
$1,000.
"Wow."
"Yeah, $1,000. That's how much I wanted to ride an ostrich. And this guy says that there are two kinds of ostriches. There are the kind that you can ride and the kind that will kill you if you try. I own the latter."
So that was pretty much out, she said.
It should be noted at this point he made up his mind that her bird-like hands and her hearty laugh and her bizarre pronouncements were enticing. And she was actually like Alex, but that was cool. That could be incorporated into the analysis. It could be tagged in the plus column if he so wished.
$1,000, he said.
"Yep," she said. Despite his general opposition to such bald declarations of capitalistic intent, he was impressed that she wanted something so spectacularly, so singularly. Then, for 2 or 3 minutes, there was silence. Eventually, it dawned on Craig that he should say something.
"So, you an Orlando native, or?"
"I'm in town for a conference, actually. Happening tomorrow. Small business conference. I own a vintage store," she said.
"Raka."
This is the sound of a metaphorical metal object careening through Craig's thoughts. Raka, raka, raka is the sound of the metal object smashing the little eggs of interest in his brain as he goes back over the events of the past few minutes and begins to piece them together in light of this revelation. The hot dogs. Craig Codex 2.33897. Always pretend to like hot dogs. It will confuse people. They spoke for a few minutes about the conference and about where she was from, but the entire time Craig was growing steadily more convinced that he was dealing with one of them. Raka, this is the possibility that she is not real, that nothing has been real, not the hot dog cart, not the thing with the ostriches, and what a clever thing to plant if not a real thing, not the way she smells really nice. Raka, Raka. This is the realization that he has been staring at the ground for a long time without saying anything. I think I might try and do something interesting while I'm here, she said. Well, you're in the right place. Got lots of great theme parks, he said, testing her. Yeah, or something else. There are actually other things to do in this town, she said. Something other than amusement parks? Mixed data here to process. They both laughed, and then it was okay to not laugh or to not talk. It was okay to sit, look, absorb. Sitting in silence lasted for some time. This sitting in silence has been pleasant. Want to do this again sometime? She asked eventually. Craig laughed. There was a chance that she was one of them. Better than 50%. Better than 70%, actually, given their concentration in Orlando. But still... Yes, he said, minus the almost getting killed part. Find me at the conference then, tomorrow. Maybe we can eat lunch, she said. Okay, he said. Find me at the conference. Martha Myers was almost certainly one of their agents. She had all the hallmarks, including the cover story about liking hot dogs. Craig Codex 2.33897. Always pretend to like hot dogs. It will confuse people. They will in turn think that they should like hot dogs. That was one of the more devilish components of their conspiracy. You always suspected everyone, even though they might be civilians just going about their business enjoying hot dogs for non-counterintelligence reasons. Find me at the conference. If you are real, possibility. Find me at the conference. If you are a plant, a spy, any attempt to sway from important work, danger. Find me at the conference. Her exhortation reverberated with some vigor. There was another life out there when all their machinations were at last cleared aside. It had been so long since anyone had glimpsed this world, he could only chance the barest guess what it might look like. Very likely the food would be better. Still, whether or not there was the dangling possibility of meaningful human connection, it was time to gather his pigeons for the big show. Time was short. P1. He took an Uber back to the hotel, took a 23-minute nap while the weather channel soothed, then placed the birdcage and the pigeon-catching apparatus into the red wagon he'd stolen from a front yard in Dayton, Ohio, and headed to the sidewalks. He moved away from the busy tourist areas, eventually locating a park populated only by the homeless and his quarry. He scattered the seed on the ground and waited. A beautiful gray and white pigeon bobbed towards him in the dirt. Cooing indicated the plumed creature was interested. Craig sat absolutely still until it came closer. Then, as it was distracted eating delicious seeds, he placed the small catchment over the top of the pigeon. It flapped furiously, but it had nowhere to go. One down. He transferred the pigeon from the catchment to a larger cage. It flew around its new home madly before giving up and sitting on one of the perches resignedly. It was nice to have a discreet task set ahead of him, to clear the brain of any dissenting voices that might squiggle in there, with reminders of the absurdity of capturing pigeons in a park in Central Florida, dissenting voices that might question the feasibility of what he attempted. Everything was clear, here, now, as it had once been when he had gone to Daytona and eaten at Denny's, when he'd infiltrated the event planner's lair, when he'd been rewarded for coming up with the idea to pin passive-aggressive reminders about refrigerator policies in break rooms all over the country. Another bird approached his seed trap, a light brown beauty, a real winner. Peck, peck, The pigeon-catching apparatus was almost impossible to mess up. Two down. Throughout it all, through the scone-soaked annual gatherings and the asymmetrical performance reviews and the relentless sandwiches, he had always kept the faith. He kept an eye out for looky-loos and municipal representatives who might object to his capture of wild fowl on public property without the right permits, making quick work of capturing eight of the choicest pigeons he could find, birds possessing all their toes and the martial spirit they would need for what lay ahead. He left the park. It was tricky navigating back through the crowded tourist area with his recently captured Confederates. Passers-by glanced, pointed, giggled, and some went as far as to ask him questions about the pigeons. There was no time for their invasive queries, so he simply shouted, "Pigeons are excellent birds, and I like them very much, and you should too." He had to shout this eight times on his way back to the hotel to forestall any impediments to his progress. His voice was hoarse with the effort of it by the time he reached the hotel. He slipped around the back way so he wouldn't chance an encounter with the hotel management, as he was quite sure he wasn't supposed to bring eight wild pigeons into his room, caged or otherwise. They were still rather excited by all the activity and being kidnapped, so he put on the weather channel, which seemed to calm them a bit. Once they stopped fluttering about, he gave them code names and a detailed breakdown of their mission. They did not have any follow-up questions. He put a towel over the cage so they could get some sleep, so they'd be rested. Nothing like a sleep-deprived pigeon to screw up a perfectly good plan. Night fell, and Craig ate at a mostly empty Indian buffet which had surprisingly decent sag paneer. Night fell and the city crackled. The city bristled. Night fell and they did this and went there, and they were not aware of the great effort that went into convincing them that they were there of their own free will, that they wanted the hot dogs, the t-shirts, the orange hotels, that they had been waiting their whole lives for this, and the kids were having fun, and they were having fun, and they would never get bored. Night fell and Craig went up to the big wheel. "Single rider, single rider!" and ascended to the pinnacle, and the spangle of the world strung haphazardly below, and he was almost tricked into thinking it was beautiful. He could have been convinced if someone, anyone from the entire organization, just once in all the years he'd worked for them, had been able to tell him their discreet aims, what it all meant. Then perhaps he would not be here. Perhaps he'd still be toiling towards their goals, humming happily, eating sandwiches, wearing cargo shorts, nodding in the appropriate places at anecdotes, driving a Camry, a vast twinkling sea of chain stores and speedboats and dachshund donors, stretching from San Diego to Bangor, and the brutality of the boredom foisted on them could be stomached if they scribbled on the whiteboard and told Craig just once, told him why it had to be the way it had to be. AA. The morning of May 12th, Craig tingled in all the right places with anticipation. So that he was suitably limber, 5 minutes of stretching while whale sounds emanated from his phone. Then time for coffee in the Continental breakfast area, but no time for bland English muffins or forced conversations. Then return to the hotel room, grab the wagon, the cage, moving towards the conclusion of something. Thinking of Aunt Bernadine the day he graduated from college, which was the beginning of something. "Well, you got your whole life ahead of you, kid," Aunt Bernadine had said. "Indeed," he'd said. Aunt Bernadine was unaware at the time of the commitments he'd already made. "What are you thinking you'll do with your life?" she said. "Something important. I don't know exactly what that means just yet, but I know it's going to be great. I just feel it. And you know, it's okay. I don't have to have it all figured out just yet, you know? That's what feels even better. I think everyone else thinks they have to have a firm idea, but I just have the broad strokes of it. But I know if I keep working hard, I'll get there eventually, wherever that may be," Craig had said. "That sounds wonderful, honey." Aunt Bernadine had smiled and patted him on the shoulder and filled her glass with more potato vodka. Craig had eaten another slice of cake and gone outside and looked at the inky sky and been secure about the shape of it all. And he'd drank in cool air and come back inside and danced and known that every decision he made was the right decision and they always would be. The pigeons were prenatally calm as he was as he dragged them down the sidewalk in the red wagon he'd stolen from a driveway in Dayton, Ohio, in a neighborhood where there were only three types of house. Behind them in the wagon, his aural disruption device, a handmade wonder. A speaker with magazine covers taped to the side. He'd rigged the speaker so that the tunes could not be impeded, not without a sledgehammer or an electromagnetic pulse. The power button removed, the battery case fused shut. Once this thing got going, they weren't going to be able to stop him. And he had just the musical selection to do the trick. Phil Collins's Another Day in Paradise. His craftsmanship as a songwriter coupled with his skills as a drummer would surely jam their circuitry. Once more, he was accosted by passersby regarding his unusual cargo. A family with a little blonde kid. "Pigeons are excellent birds and I like them very much, and you should too." An old lady with a fanny pack. "Pigeons are excellent birds and I like them very much, and you should too." A red-checked wino type wearing a dull Kemp shirt. "Pigeons are excellent birds, and I like them very much, and you should too." After 3 miles of walking and dodging pestering peats, he had to pause to catch his breath. He pulled his wagon next to him in the grass and sat on a bench festooned with a personal injury attorney advertisement. He provided a few last-minute reminders about the plan to his associates. They did not have any follow-up questions. A man walked closer and began examining the pigeons.
"What's with the pigeons?"
the man asked. "Pigeons are excellent birds, and I like them very much, and you should too," Craig said. "That's actually why I wanted to talk to you. I myself am very interested in pigeons. I have a coop at home in New Jersey where I keep 6 female Columba Lavia domestica." That's the domestic pigeon to the layperson. "They are indeed excellent birds, excellent pets too." The man was pleased with himself. He was wearing some sort of ironic science t-shirt, glasses, tennis shoes, a fancy digital watch. Shit. It was clear this was a smart Craig. He obviously knew about the pigeons. Of course this bastard would know a thing or two about pigeons. Smart Craigs knew a thing or two about most things, especially the kinds of things that sounded like smart things. Pigeon ownership was this year's urban homesteading trend to look out for. That meant every smart Craig in the land was staying up nights reading microblogs about which pigeon breed was best, which all-natural grain they should be eating. Now he had been activated and would want to talk about something or lots of somethings. He was probably going to bring up something about the state of the Democratic Party soon, or a nonfiction book about the 1918 flu pandemic. They were clearly taking this seriously if they dispatched a smart Craig to comb the area. There were precious few of them. Due to the length of their training and the inherent contradictions of possessing vast analytical powers while working for the people who first deployed Hot Pockets into the unsuspecting civilian populace. "These aren't pets, they're actually wild pigeons," said Craig. "Although if things work out, they may become my companions. We'll see if they end up having the right temperament for captivity. You want to be careful, these guys are fierce." The smart Craig adjusted his glasses and deftly absorbed the conversational parry.
"Ah, good, good. I hope it works out for you with them. What do you think about the new soda tax they're proposing here?" the gentleman asked.
Craig thought back to a joint operation in 2007 in Sheboygan. He'd been cloistered with a smart Craig for 3 weeks in a back office, fine-tuning a plan to replace all the lagers in the area with IPAs. The smart Craig was insufferable. He took the best hotel room. He talked about string theory and Noam Chomsky and Italian cinema and vintage toys. So much talking about vintage toys. Fully 95% of smart Craigs collected vintage toys, but obviously not to play with, but to look at and never take out of the box. Aha! If he had a vintage toy, he could distract the SC-1 for long enough. Where would he get his hands on these items? in short enough time period to forestall the Smart Craig devising some sort of trap from which he would never escape. "Well, on one hand," Craig began, growing stronger with the certainty that he would end his arguments right where they began, circles upon circles upon circles, with neither party having learned anything, deciding anything, move forward with their lives in any way, but having triggered the node within the Smart Craig that stretched and flexed with the anticipation of minutes or even hours of aimless verbal flow. There are obviously health implications from the widespread and increasing consumption of soda in place of healthier options, especially water or non-fat milk, though milk has had its own set of issues that have been successfully swept under the rug, big dairy, all that. Soda, on the other hand, added sugars, support from PepsiCo and Coca-Cola, juvenile diabetes, adult diabetes, the impacts on heart disease and all that. We would be kidding ourselves if we thought we shouldn't take some sort of action, but there is also the counter-argument that the soda tax primarily impacts the poor when implemented at a point of sale in the way that it's being proposed here, that any sort of flat tax is actually regressive, and that lower economic strata won't change their decision-making process despite the tax and will essentially be punishing people for being poor, said Craig. In the absence of a mint-condition He-Man toy, this would have to do. The next best thing, an on-one-hand-on-the-other-hand engagement that did not clearly define one or other was better. Smart Craigs were incapable of encountering this type of statement without prolonged engagement. It was their most glaring weakness aside from their preference for stupid t-shirts. Interesting, interesting. I can certainly see both sides of this discussion. On one hand, SC1 began. Now was his chance. When this Smart Craig opened his mouth, the outside world disappeared to him. He was drunk on the nouns and verbs. It would be some time before he started processing outside stimuli or even stopped to look to see if anyone was listening. Craig took off running with the wagon bumping behind him and the birds fluttering wildly. Smart Craig opened his mouth to say something, then stopped and watched Craig go, but made no attempt to chase him down, choosing instead to finish his statement with only the squirrels to hear him out. Besides, the feats of physical strength were more the provenance of Bro Craigs or their close cousins, the Outdoorsy Craigs. The whole timetable would have to be shifted. He planned on walking at a leisurely pace given how goddamn hot it was so that he could keep the flop sweat within tolerable ranges, but now, thanks to the Smart Craig, they likely knew he was there and obviously they wanted to stop him because they had something big planned. This conference, all of them here in one place, so brazenly? Whatever this was, maybe even bigger than Dancing with the Stars. He dragged the wagon quickly and the birds started making even more noise, but it was fine. They would be okay. He would have to dig into his bag of tricks. Disguise, that was it. Subterfuge, infiltration. Make like one of the fun seekers, the sunblock swimmers. He ducked into the nearest tourist shop and purchased a bucket hat and green sunglasses and a t-shirt with Mickey Mouse on it. He also purchased a beach towel with a palm tree design and draped it over the pigeon cage and the speaker. This had the benefit of both calming the pigeons and disguising his vehicle and preventing questions. Feeling a bit better about things, he resumed course towards the Orange County Convention Center. T.90019. The fearsome seashell appeared on the horizon, swarmed with furious activity. They were lined up, lanyards around their necks, khaki-clad and staring into their phones for updates. So many Craigs, the very Craigness of them, akin to the skin tingles scared up by a mess of bees. He knew that if he got too close, one of them would see the pigeons and start to put things together. He bumped the wagon out of the major thoroughways and towards a service entrance. There, he spied a green maintenance vehicle with a key still in the ignition. The flatbed in the back was empty. The workers were nowhere to be seen. He quickly transferred the cage and the speaker into the back of the vehicle and started driving towards the doorway. This would be much better than the wagon. At the very least, he could rest his tired legs for a moment. He chuckled to himself as he backed up the golf cart type thing and thought of the best place to enter the cavernous building. That's when he saw her, just meters away, out of place, standing suspiciously. Martha Myers. She was not smiling, but even without it, she was compelling to Craig. They'd clearly done their homework. They knew just what to do to arrest his momentum at the final juncture. She did not move.
"What's with the pigeons?"
she asked. The look on her face was perhaps amusement, but veered more closely to horror. Gods, the bifurcation! If she were real, he could take the time to break it down for her and see if she'd join him in the front seat, get a close-up view of the dissolution of everything. But if she were a part of it, well, she was likely here to stop him. What the hell? Why not? What harm could it do at this point to tell her the truth? "Martha, these are pigeons I caught yesterday in the park where there were mostly homeless people. I'm going to let them loose inside the convention center. Oh, wait, let me back up. I've deduced through interrogating a bro Craig that this convention center is where the Craigs are having their annual meeting. Here, out in the open. They're up to something big, I just know it. Something even bigger than Dancing with the Stars. Bigger than Hot Pockets. So the pigeons, yeah, they're part of it. Nobody likes pigeons, even though they're pretty much the same as doves. People love doves, go figure. So I'm going to let these pigeons loose inside the place, and I'm going to show these people there's another way. And everything will be different after that. Oh, also, Phil Collins' Another Day in Paradise is involved. It's a great song."
"I'm not sure what you're talking about," she said evenly, backing away. She was either maintaining cover, or she was an actual human who had no idea what he was talking about. The truth would out soon either way. If she were real, living, breathing real, she would be the first person he would seek out afterwards. Now, though, a responsibility to the human race to attend to. Craig pressed down the accelerator, and Martha, who was possibly a real human being, stood watching him drive slowly towards the seashell building. Martha, who perhaps could have watched movies with him and climbed trees if she were real. If she were real, she would understand what he had to do. If she were real, she would seek him out after and praise him for having the courage to do what tens of thousands of Craigs before him had lacked the courage to do. A service entrance appeared, and he went through it and drove along, and everyone just assumed he worked for the Orange County Convention Center, given that he was driving the green golf cart type thing, so no one tried to stop him. Not as he drove down the same hallway four times. Not as he nearly got stuck in a narrow spot down on a big staircase. And no one stopped him as he drove right towards room 11A. The room where keynote speaker Craig T. Nelson was set to appear. He stopped and checked the sound amplification device one last time, a single exultation to prepare himself. Then he pressed play. Phil Collins' masterful guitar and drum intro started at maximum volume. Still, he waited. When the piano came in, he hit the gas on the small green vehicle, full speed ahead through the double doors, angel voice crooning. He could see them at the closest table, crouched over their promotional materials, fingering carrot sticks and tuna wraps, smug and secure in their Craigified redoubt. They were confused. They never in a thousand Craig generations would have suspected that they would be vulnerable. Not here, not with so many pastry choices. The engine on the lawn maintenance vehicle hummed quietly, even as it reached full speed, allowing Phil's glorious voice to reach their ears unadulterated. He sped by them at upwards of 8 miles an hour, a sea of confused faces of people who'd been talking to perfect strangers about the pools at their hotels, the cats they owned, and now they stopped and stared, wondering if it wasn't some part of the presentation. He opened the latch on the pigeon cage. "Fly, my beautiful warriors," he called to them. The pigeons flew from the cage, swirl of feathers and cooing and streams of excrement. "Oh, think twice. It's just another day for you and me in paradise." "That's right, you devious motherfuckers. Phil motherfucking Collins," Craig shouted. He was finally free of them, all of them. Those Applebee's eating assholes. Free. No more would he have to pretend to be interested when they talked about their food allergies. He wouldn't have to infiltrate, to deceive, to carry forward their nebulous missions in Midwestern towns perched on the precipice of oblivion.
Never, not for the rest of his life, would he have to eat a turkey sandwich. A security guard approached on foot, running next to the vehicle.
"Sir, sir, please, sir," the guard said.
Throughout the cavernous room, they were rising from their seats, staring. The security guard ran alongside the cart, but he wasn't ready for the pepper spray just yet.
"Sir, please stop the cart," the guard said.
Not a chance, not now, not here. For centuries, they'd talked about bread and ruined everything and never once guessed someone would try to stop them.
"Not today, guy," said Craig.
He jammed the accelerator, but apparently there was no higher speed. Ahead, on a table, rested a giant cake in the shape of a red telephone. It was the size of a juvenile elephant seal.
"Sir,"
the man looked at his name tag.
"Craig, please, Mr. Craig," said the security guard.
He headed straight towards the giant congratulatory confection, chuckling as he watched the security guard slow to a walk behind him. The security guard had likely exhausted the amount of concern he was able to muster for $9 an hour. A gaggle of them moved out of the way of the table and the cake. Phil's masterful drumming and dulcet tones reached a climax. "You and me in paradise, just think about it, think about it. It's just another day for you and me. It's just another day for you and me in paradise, in paradise." In college, he had gotten good grades, and before that, he'd filled in the circles and held up the trophies and reported the bullies, and he'd taken the job at the marketing firm, and he sent the emails he was supposed to send, and he went to Daytona like they'd asked, and he helped them sign up for credit cards they didn't need, and he wrote his name between the lines, and he ate the bland food without even a single pepper flake, and the whole time, he didn't question it. Not one single part of it. Every day, every night, he was there for them, and they never once explained it all to him, and he was fine with that. It was enough for him, and it seemed like it was enough for everybody else too. The not knowing. He did what he could, and Alex had said it was enough. And then one day, it wasn't enough, and she was gone, living with Dave from accounting. And if he could have just told her about the important work, about what he and all the other Craigs were up to, maybe it could have been different. But the problem was he never knew exactly what it was they were all doing. The maintenance vehicle struck a bundle of cords just in front of the stupid phone cake and stopped. But as he was not wearing any sort of restraint, Craig did not stop. Action, reaction. Craig was airborne, heading straight for the cake. He looked at all their faces, and there, plain as day, was proof that the Craigian grip was not absolute. Shock, amazement, perhaps even questioning. Maybe not today, maybe next week, but at some point they would rise from their chairs and pour out onto International Drive, pulsing with determination. They would raise their hands in the middle of meetings and ask why they had to follow so many goddamn signs just trying to get something out of the refrigerator in the break room, and they would run through the Walmart screaming and knocking over display cases. They'd stop and look at clouds and smile at ducklings and cease wearing cargo shorts. They would, he knew it. They'd never eat at another Denny's ever again. Azure skies, hikes in mountains, hand-holding, salsa eating, dancing without celebrity accompaniment. So much there for all of them. He did not know exactly what would happen, and it was fine. For the first time, he was completely, 100% truly accepting of the impossibility of knowing what exactly would come of it. His face merged with the gigantic baked good, and the vanilla frosting filled his nose and his mouth. As he heard the clamor of them, the shouts of more security guards, some sort of alarm, hands reaching for him, excited cries of, "Sir, sir, 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 sir," he swam through the ruined cake, evading their grasp, stuffing the rich flavors into his mouth, laughing lustily, relieved, relaxed, fulfilled, confident that what took place this day would be recorded in the history books forever.
The end. Well, there you go. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Storytime Broadcast. Please make sure to like and subscribe and all of those things, and follow us on social media. Hope you enjoyed this one as much as I did. Thanks. I'm Eric Brah.